Though I found myself wondering about suffering as my husband Joel began to get involved with an intense style of bicycling called randonneuring. This style of biking, it's not about speed or who wins, it's just about finishing within a set time frame. There are no prizes, there are no winners, it's just finishers. The catch is that they ride extreme lengths. I think the shortest distance that they ride is about 125 miles, the longest 750 miles. Joel recently designed a ride for the Great Lakes Randonneuring Association that went out of Fond du Lac. It was over 600 miles long to be ridden in just 75 hours. That averages out to about 200 something a day. Over 30 randonneur riders showed up from across the country. I helped out by volunteering, offering food and water to the riders. One night found us sitting in the hotel serving food to those who finished the first leg. The riders had left that morning at 4:30 a.m. and had ridden from Fond du Lac up to Sturgeon Bay and back again. I think the earliest riders came in around midnight. Others staggered in from then on until 4 in the morning. Keep in mind, the next day held more riding. The next morning, most folks were up at about 6 a.m. to be on the road. And yes, that meant that some people only got a couple hours of sleep. That could be pretty typical. Keeping plates full of food for them as they returned, starving and tired, I asked them about this unique kind of suffering. Some shared that they had even hallucinated at times when they were out on the bikes. Others admitted to falling asleep on their bikes and even falling off. A few others had suffered some serious injuries over the years that had caused them to stop riding for a year or so. But here they were, back again, pushing their bodies in unbelievable ways. And I asked myself, and I asked them, why? Well, every one of them was passionate about bicycling. It was where they felt most alive. All of them responded that they'd like to test their bodies to see what they could do. They said they felt really proud of themselves when they could achieve a goal that seemed impossible. If they could do this, it helped them to believe that they could handle just about anything. I rarely push myself physically. Don't get me wrong, I do exercise. I have witnesses here. Tom Hanna says he sees me walking in the mornings. I walk 4 miles at least 4 times a week. I do yoga, I kayak. I am not a total couch potato, but I also don't have a competitive bone in my body. And causing pain to myself on purpose, well, that just sounds like a really bad idea. I've said that if you ever see me running, call 911. Something terrible has just happened. So as I looked at these riders, I began to wonder about suffering. Is there value to it? The more I began to look into the topic of suffering, the more I realized that there are many types of suffering. In fact, I've decided that the type of suffering that athletes engage in could better be described as privileged suffering, because they choose to do it on purpose. Of course, that doesn't negate its value. I suspect that kind of suffering helps athletes to sort things out about themselves, perhaps even overcome some of their own demons. It helps them to achieve goals and conquer fears, in essence, helping them to make sense of themselves and perhaps even the world around them. But I guess for me, I've always viewed that suffering is when things happen that we cannot control, things we did not ask for, like disease, death, or destruction. And that got me wondering, is there value in that kind of suffering? Many Christian faiths will embrace suffering as a way to better understand Christ and to be more like him. Suffering is thought to bring clarity and illumination. Christ suffered for them as he was hung on the cross. Some folks believe that it will help us to be more understanding and more compassionate to others when we suffer. Buddhists believe that all life is suffering, and that suffering comes not from the event, but our attachment to the expectations of that event. For example, we may clutch to the belief that we will live a long and healthy life, but if we're struck down with disease or loss, we suffer because it's not what we thought was going to happen. And we also know that suffering isn't always physical or noticeable either. Those of us who struggle personally or have a loved one who struggles with depression or schizophrenia or other serious mental health issues know what a vicious cycle of suffering that can be. These are the types of suffering that I thought of as I chose the reading for today. That physical and mental suffering that we do not choose, but inevitably it seems to fall upon us at some point in our lives. I felt like I could hear its writer, Jen Richardson's voice, practically screaming off of the page, "Don't tell me that what doesn't kill me will make me stronger. Don't tell me that God doesn't give us more than we can handle. Don't tell me that this will make me more compassionate, more holy. Don't you dare." I personally don't believe in a God or an entity that pokes a finger out of the sky and says, you there, you're going to get cancer. And you will lose your child. It's my plan for them. It's my will. Me, that is not holy. I can't and I won't believe in that kind of entity. And yet every day in my work as a hospice chaplain, I'm asked about this God. Why is God making me suffer? Rabbi Mark Gelman says that many of us create an image of a micromanaging God where every hair on our head is counted and that not a single sparrow falls from the sky without God knowing. And he says if that's true, then that God is indeed a cruel God. And sadly, in my experience, this is the God that many people embrace. I believe that the universe was created with laws of physics that cause it to run as it does. And usually it runs in such a lovely way. But then we make human mistakes. We crash into cars. People are knocked down by winds and waves and storms and they drown. Illness takes hold in our cells. And suddenly we're terminally ill. A chemical imbalance in our brain causes us to want to harm ourselves. This is not caused by choice. This is just how the laws of physics and nature can take hold of us in random ways. Suffering is something that just happens. It happens daily. It happens in small doses and in large doses. But I do not believe in a God or any entity that singles us out for that. So, if suffering is a part of life, a part of us that most of us truly do not want to have happen, how do we handle it when it comes to us? For those of us who turn to God or to a higher power, Rabbi Gelman says that maybe we shouldn't look to that source to act as a magician, to pray too suddenly, to change our situation. He says instead, what if we turn to that source of love with an image in our mind of a shepherd, someone or something to guide us through that suffering? Last week, I preached about grace, and I said that there was no grace in illness or suicide or hate or violence or war, but that grace does rush in during and after these events. And I suspect that each and every one of us here have felt that happen in our lives. Illness can bring a clarity that allows a family to come back together again after years of discord. Hate can cause others to rush in and love and compassion and stand up and speak out for those who are being persecuted. Our grief and our sadness are softened by the grace and love of our community of caring that rushes in to hold us so gently in our loss and remind us that we're not alone. Right alongside that suffering comes this flowing and beautiful rush of grace and carries, and I believe shepherds us. We cannot stand when it hurts to even open our eyes. Grace can come in and hold us in our pain. Many of us spend a lot of time working hard to keep suffering at bay. We eat well, we exercise, we try hard to take care of our health. Some of us are in therapy and using medications to help us walk through our daily lives with our own mental health issues. These things are all good, but writer Pico Iyer says that the only thing worse than assuming that you could get the better of suffering is to imagine that you can do nothing in its wake. Let me repeat that. The only thing worse than assuming that you could get the better of suffering is to imagine that you can do nothing in its wake. For me, to do nothing in the wake of suffering is giving up hope. Hope that tomorrow could be better. Folks who reach that place where they feel they can do nothing often find their lives too unbearable to continue. And my heart aches for folks who find themselves there. Buddhist Pema Chodron says that when we have lost our ground completely and we're unable to hold it together, we forget that it takes loss for there to be birth. Reaching our limit is not some kind of punishment. She says it's actually a sign of good health. When we meet that place where we feel we're about to die, where we feel fear and trembling, but strangely, we rarely take that feeling and that fear as a message that it's time to stop struggling and turn and look at what is threatening us. As you see, suffering is a message to our bodies and to our minds that tells us that we are about to go into unknown territory. But first, let me say this. Please, please know that severe pain, both physically and mentally, needs an additional kind of help alongside of what Chodron speaks of. Severe physical pain needs excellent doctors and medication. Severe mental health issues need the same. But for those of us who do not fall into that level of suffering, Chodron offers this. Maybe, in the wake of suffering, perhaps we can be curious and be mindful of our reactions. Chodron says that our pain becomes rooted in our lopsided view of reality. Our culture teaches us that suffering is bad. But the thing is, where did we get the idea that we can know joy and pleasure without knowing pain and suffering? Cannot know one without the other. Pain and pleasure go hand in hand. Anyone who has given birth or been at a birth, you know this to be true. Birthing is so very painful. And yet, there is great pleasure and joy when it is over. Death can be painful and create such sadness. And yet I've also seen it bring such peace and beauty. Chodron reminds us that everything that ends is also the beginning of something else. Suffering is not a punishment, and pleasure is not a reward. Part of my job is to help those who desire it to have a good death. That sounds like an oxymoron, but it's a lovely thing to create and work towards at end of life. I often help people to think deeply about what they love about one another and share it. I offer space to extend forgiveness and redemption to those who have hurt us and those maybe we have harmed. By doing these things, the heart softens. Old hurts are released and suffering can evaporate and turn into beauty and peace. But I will say this too, that after a loved one dies or a great loss happens through destruction, those who come out the other side after the anger and sadness have lessened still have to learn to live with that gaping hole. The hole of missing a loved one or having lost a home, it's still there. It doesn't really go away. I think that people just learn how to live with that hole in their lives. It becomes the new normal. After a loss or a tragedy, they may be back to work, raising their families, inviting in new lives, but they're always walking past the emotional hole of not having their husband or wife or child or loved one there. It never really leaves them. They just learn to live with it. Recently, I had a patient die of cancer, and she was only 40. Her mother and her siblings cared for her at home until she died. Her mother struggled with the unfairness of it all. She was filled with so much anger at God and at cancer and at everything. Her daughter still had so much to live for. And as we continued to meet and talk, the mother realized that she actually knew a good handful of friends and people in her community who had also lost adult children. She began to think that if she could get together with them, she might learn how to survive this. She was aching for someone to understand how she felt. She felt like no one knew what she was going through and how she was suffering. And that got me to thinking, is perhaps the solution to suffering is knowing that we're not alone in it. Someone else out there has felt some of the same feelings, and we are not alone in our pain. And again, is this where grace comes rushing in? When we come across someone who understands and can sit with us in this awful pain and not run away or not be afraid to talk about it. I know this is why support groups are so very important. I serve as a facilitator for a support group for caregivers of loved ones who have dementia. And each time I go, I see such brave people sharing their fears and their anger and their frustrations with folks who understand. In my work as a chaplain, that is when I see suffering relieved. Even just for a bit, when I can sit there and be with my patients and families in their struggles, to be able to share it and know that it is being held with love and grace, it is so helpful to know that someone is there. There's something healing in being with someone else who's strong enough to sit with us in our suffering and yet human enough not to pretend to try and control it. Sharing our suffering seems like a simple solution. Funny how sometimes it's the things we least understand that deserve our deepest trust. And the children encourages the use of the Buddhist practice of Tonglen. Tonglen recognizes that when we are suffering, we are also a part of all people who are suffering in the world, and we are not alone in this. Tonglen is a breathing meditation that invites us to breathe in the suffering of all the people in the world who are suffering just as we are in that moment. For example, if you're suffering from cancer and its treatments, to imagine all the other cancer patients feeling just like you, and breathe in that suffering with them, and then breathe out peace and love to them and to yourself. I have found this to be useful and calming when I find myself backed into a corner with fear and anxiety. I have found it to be a calming exercise to do with my patients who are struggling with pain and frustration. One of the bikers in Joel's Rhonda Nearing group said, "A suffering shared is a suffering halved." Helen Keller said, "Although the world is full of suffering, it is full of overcoming it too. And in that overcoming, it seems I come back again to our ability to share our vulnerability and how sharing it can relieve our suffering." And it seems so funny to me that it comes back to that again. Being our full self, in our messiness, in our hurt. Why do we think that putting up a facade and telling the world we have it together is the way to relieve our suffering? Sharing our vulnerable self fully with one another can lead us to healing and to find wholeness. The answer to getting through to the other side of suffering is to share that suffering with others who understand or with those who are willing to sit with us, even if they don't fully understand. Theologian and writer Parker Palmer says, "Here's the deal. The human soul doesn't want to be advised or fixed or saved. It simply wants to be witnessed, to be seen and heard and championed exactly as it is. When we make that kind of deep bow to the soul of a suffering person, our respect reinforces the soul's healing resources. This is a resource that can help the sufferer through it." Palmer's words I hear echoes of our earlier reading. "Don't tell me that what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. Give me instead the blessing of sitting with me when you cannot think of what to say." And so we go back to the beginning question of this sermon. Is there value in this terrible, awful kind of suffering that we can't help but fall into in our lives? And it's inevitable. For you see, when we risk our heart to someone else, when we love them, we risk suffering. Because we love them, we suffer. When we lose them, or they're hurting, or they're sick, or they have a clunker. But here's the thing. We simply cannot stop taking that risk. Because deep down, we know it's true. To have truly loved someone is the greatest thing of all. Beholding that truth, we simply must take that risk. And with that risk, we invite suffering. So yes, I believe there is value in suffering. We hurt because we have loved so much. We ache because we have learned something new about ourselves. We are in new territory, and we are forever changed. And as we get through to the other side of suffering, this new reality can bring us a better understanding of ourselves and others. Through it, we learn the most important thing of all, that we are not alone. Yes, most importantly, we learn that we are not alone. May it be so.